What's the occasion? Does anybody know? It's Veterans Day. It is, so thank you for that. It is Veterans Day. But it is good to see so many of you today. It's good to see so many of our youth. And it is, I guess, it's the, yesterday was technically Veterans Day. Today we celebrate it. So 2 days, the veterans are very, very much worth 2 days. I want to thank all of you who have served in the country or our families of those that have served. When you grow up in Southern California in the 50s and 60s, as I did, you sooner or later are involved more times often than not in a very special sport. It's not unique to Southern California now, but it was kind of then, kind of. And that is, of course, surfing. Recently, I was in one of our spare bedrooms, and in a corner, there were all the surfboards, and we've had them there for a number of years. John and Zach, our two boys, both our boards were there at various times. They had their custom board and then a standard board, long board, short board, and their leashes and their wetsuits are in the closet, and I brought back lots and lots of memories. And then, dude, among all the new, nice long boards was this crummy, cracked, busted up, dinged, stress fractured short board. My Surfboard Australia from the 60s. And I was never very good at surfing, but I tried very hard. And it was a lot of fun. If you've never done, how many of you have been up on a surfboard? Well, quite a few of you. That's good. How many of you stayed up for more than 10 seconds? Oh, good. A few of you have. Good. It's a lot of fun. And I looked at my board, and as I looked at the board, it brought back even more memories. My memory did indeed was flooded. And in fact, I remember one particular day, probably in the late 60s, where I and two friends were heading back up Beach Boulevard from Huntington Beach. You have to remember, back in the day, the 605 wasn't the 605. So to get from place to place, there were no freeways. You drove. So up Beach Boulevard, part of the way we went. And we didn't have fancy racks for the boards on the top of our car. In fact, the car we were in was one of the guy's father's car. And I think it was a Rambler, right? But it ran, and the gas was cheap. So all three of us came back from a long day up Beach Boulevard. And so instead of having the boards up on top of the car, we had the, don't laugh, picture this, this is a visual. We had all three boards inside the car, angled. I was in the back seat, and so the tail of the boards were near my head off to the left. They went across the front seat, and the noses were stuck near the windshield in the upper right corner. I know. Hey, you got to do what you got to do. And we were all tired. So I was sitting slouching in the back, my two friends up front. So you can picture that. The driver of our car never saw the station wagon that had stopped near Talbert on Beach Boulevard. And we hit that car, I guess, 35, 38 miles an hour, and it was pretty bad. Did we have our seatbelts on? There weren't any seatbelts. They weren't standard by then. How about airbags? Yeah, you're laughing. They weren't invented. It almost sounds macabre and prehistoric and reckless. But how many of you grew up without seatbelts in a car? How many of you survived? Okay, half the hands went back down. Good. It was pretty rough. So when we hit that car, the driver's face, the man who was driving the front car, a good friend, he went into the steering wheel. Now, you survived. It kind of stopped the whole thing. The boards for the front, the guy in the front seat in front of me, the board stopped him, but he did go through the windshield halfway, bounced back down into the seat. Me, I disobeyed my mother, and it was a good thing. I was slouching in the back seat, laying down, and both my feet went under the front seats, and didn't break, but pretty came close to breaking both my lower legs. They were both knocked unconscious. We salvaged the driver's teeth with ice from a nearby fast food store, which is now an In-N-Out, by the way. And it just so happened, because both of them were knocked out, they went to the hospital, which was, if you know the area, Beach Boulevard and Talbert, this Huntington Hospital is right there, right on the other corner. And so that was fortunate. My buddy on the front seat had glass all over his hair, and I got out of the car. I was able to walk. As they went to the hospital, we all survived. And we went on to live, and I've lost touch with both of them. But when the policeman arrived, he was a little less than pleased. Little less than pleased. And because I was the only one that was there and conscious, I was the only one he could yell at. He knew I wasn't driving. And he, at a very high level of voice, high volume, I'll remember this to this day, because it was many, many years ago, he said, "You should be dead." And I said, "Dude, dead? I guess so." He said, "What has happened here is a series of miracles. I can't believe this. The car is totaled. You should have heard the father of the friend when he heard about all this." Yes, he was very glad his son was okay. As I recall, the father, we notified the father. We had to find a payphone, right, to notify him. He came down, saw the boy, and I got the wonderful, wonderful, joyful ride home with the father all by myself. But I won't ever forget what the policeman said. He said, "You all three technically walked away from this." He said, "It's a series of miracles. You should be dead." And that was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But that story, among many others that has occurred to me, it was a miracle. What I want you to do with me is follow on a journey. Not my journey, but yours. A miracle is defined variously as a surprising and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws, and therefore is considered to be work of divine agency. Another definition, it is an extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. We are all familiar with the word miracle. Eric Metaxas, a very prolific author, has a book, along with his book Bonhoeffer, wrote a book, Miracles. But it's C.S. Lewis, and I'd advise, if you can, I'd recommend reading it. C.S. Lewis, in his very classic work entitled Miracles, he stated, I'm going to read this slow, it's a little long. He says, and those of us that are C.S. Lewis fans, this is classic C.S. Lewis. "If immediate experience cannot prove or disprove the miraculous, still less can history do so. Many people think one can decide whether a miracle occurred in the past by examining the evidence, according to the ordinary rules of historical inquiry. But the ordinary rules cannot be worked until we have decided whether miracles are possible, and if so, how probable they are." Miracles seem to defy the laws of physics, of life. C.S. Lewis's response is what we would call a classic and very logical approach, which is what he's known for. Very classic. He was had the dawn of literature, English literature in England. That's his approach, and it's very valid. As it relates to those things that happen and have happened in our life that are indescribable, the wonder of a grand event that we cannot explain, don't understand. Today I want to discuss with you the concept of miracles, but from a very different perspective. I want to talk about the miracles in your life and your perspective. How they happened, do they happen, why they happen. And in so doing, we again undergird why we believe in a great God and an intervening Son, Jesus Christ. I've entitled it real simple, Looking for Miracles. Turn with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, because of it's embedded in this very famous chapter, the Shema. And in many cases, these very famous sections of chapters, there's other things there that we overlook because we're focused on specific verses. Now, you're going to see and remember very quickly the hero Israel. But I want to read the whole thing in context. So let's just turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1. Now, remember, this is Moses. This is with Israel. This is part of the wanderings. And so the Deuteronomos is the second telling of the law. So a lot of this is repetition from what happened in Leviticus. So there's a lot of reemphasis. He says now, "This is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. All those words are very, very well known to us. The world over, most religious people, Jew and non-Jew, know these verses. Verse 6, and these words which I command you today will be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them while you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, and you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and of your gates. These verses talk about the unity of God, the power of God, but also the power of God over man's life, to teach into the heart and to do so daily to your children, to your grandchildren. You're to bind them. It says, you shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the door, sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. To Jews, as many of you know, that is where we see the phylacteries, where they were wrapped the leather strap around their arm, hand over the heart. There's a box over their head. So it is their hand, their heart, their head. And that's how they observe that verse. Very religious, very devout, fascinating ritual. The doorposts of your house, what's the word that the Jews use for the doorposts of your house? The mezuzah, the little thing, right, next to a very observant Jew. It's a little box. I have one on my wall. A very good friend of ours sent us. I don't have it on the doorpost of my house. I have it on the side of the wall. So it's close. But what it has in it, this little wooden box, it's only about that long. Some of them are very beautiful. This one is. It has the words of Deuteronomy on the front, and inside is a scroll with these words inside that mezuzah. And whenever any devout Jew enters or exits its home, he will touch that. That's part of their ritual, to remind them that these words of God are so important, and it is by repetition they remember. And this is important that we remember. But let's continue, because it talks about the purpose of all this reminding. Verse 10, so it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities, which you did not build, houses full of all good things, which you did not fill, hewn out wells, which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees, which you did not plant. When you have eaten and are full, then beware lest you forget the Lord who has brought you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. You shall fear the Lord your God and serve him, and shall take oaths in his name. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of the peoples who are all around you. For the Lord your God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord your God be aroused against you and destroy you from the face of the earth. Now we can concentrate on the dire warning. This is going to happen to you if you don't do these things. But what I want to focus on with you today is God is recalling to Israel, you need to remember these things for the place that you're going to inhabit. These are cities you did not build, vineyards you did not plant, wells you did not dig. And the reason was they were already there. God said, I'm going to have conquered the people in those lands, and you will take over those lands that they built. I am giving you this. I am giving you this, God says. You're to remember you were slaves. You're to remember these things, all the miracles that occurred in Egypt, and you're now free, and you need to remember that. Okay, Israel says, okay, we get it. We get it. Why all the reminders? Because you will forget. I'm not going to forget. You'll forget. People forget. And God says, I'm going to give you reminders. Because in this particular case, the forgetting occurs in stages. And it happens in our life, yours and mine. When an event happens in life, we often will not realize what has happened until later. The details are a blur. If you or you've been around someone who's gone through a very tragic or very tumultuous life event, they are often disoriented. You're overtaken by the events because it's you. You're bewildered. You're befuddled. It's a series of occurrences that happen so quickly, like a car wreck. Let's see. I'm in a car. I'm probably not paying attention. I'm in the back seat. Did I see the car in front? Yeah, about a half a nanosecond before impact. After that, it was a blur. And yes, the human mind has fight or flight, right? I couldn't flight because I couldn't walk real good. And so we try and resist, but it is a series of bewildering events. We don't understand why. And I think in many cases, the exodus of Israel was the same way. It happened so quickly. And God gave them, or they endured to themselves, 40 years of wandering to think about it. And even then, God says to them, you need to remember what happened 40 years ago. And what's going to happen, what I'm going to give you. But once you're there, I want you to remember what happened before, what I did for you. I want you to remember those things that happened. Turn with me if you would. God's not done. Because he really doesn't believe the Israelites. Why? Because he knows they're going to forget. So two chapters later, and there are many, many more, but I want to just take these two because they deliver the point very well. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, where we'll spend the vast majority of our time remaining, please turn. It's not that long a chapter, but it's a fascinating chapter. It underscores the issue that periodically through Deuteronomy and elsewhere, God reminds. And it's very, very similar to what we read in Deuteronomy 6, just two chapters ago. But he goes into some aspects of it and he drills it down. He takes it from 30, 40,000 feet and he drills down on a couple of subjects, which I think are going to be important for this. So let's read chapter 8, verses 1 and 2. He says, every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe. We heard that. That you may live and multiply. We heard that. And go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. We got that. Verse 2, and you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he did. He did this for a reason, to humble them, to test them, not to kill them, but to test them. Many times when we go through a test, when you take a test, who's the test for? The teacher? The fellow student? The guy, the gal next to you on your left or your right? No, the test is for you. So you'll know who you are. I hate to break it to you. God knows about everyone in this building. Intimately. He sees through concrete, reinforced steel, everything. He sees us when we wake up. He sees us when we lie down. He sees us while we're sleeping. He knows this. He did this to humble you, to test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know. Notice this refrain again, which you did not know, nor your fathers knew, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. He says this to remind them, to recall the 40 years. He continues, your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. He says, your clothes did not wear out. Your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. It basically infers that your shoes and your clothes didn't wear out. When I have the 40 years remembrance, and many of us in this room are not even 40, but to go back as long as you can, as young as you may be. The testing and the tragedy of the past or the events of the past are important for us to remember as much as we try to forget. But what's interesting is he says, your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. 40 years? I got shirts, well, maybe a couple of them. No, they're not that old. They're not that old. But I brought something that's close. Is this cool or what? Remember these? They're 35 years old. And if I wore them for 35, they're going to wear out. But God says, your clothes didn't wear out. Becky's telling me to throw clothes out all the time. Honey, it has holes in it. In fact, it has so many holes in it, there's more holes than cloth. Throw it out. I said, but it still fits. It's worn out. Throw it away. God says your clothes didn't wear out. Think about that. Wouldn't they have noticed that? Right? Wouldn't you know if you'd had clothes on or the same sets of clothes for 40 years? But God says to you to remember those things down to your feet, Israel. Your feet didn't swell because they did a lot of walking. He says for him to remember this. And God, as man chastens his son, he says, so the Lord chastened you. Now, in verse 6, these are key, and I want you to notice and remember this similarity to Deuteronomy chapter 6. When my parents said something for the fourth time to me, it's not that I couldn't hear them. Maybe it was because I couldn't hear them, or I wasn't listening. Why do they tell me four times, five times, six times? Why do you do it to your children? Why do you wish your children would say that to your grandchildren? You're not telling them enough. They're going to forget. You need to tell them over and over again, like I told you. I'm not going to do to them what you did to me. Then they're going to forget. Verse 6, therefore you shall keep the commandments of the eternal your God to walk in his ways, to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs that flow out of the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are ironed and out of whose hills you can dig copper. Verse 10, when you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. So what? So what? So he gives us this. So what? He says, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to fear him, because he has done these things. It is a good land, he says. It has all the basic needs filled. And then there's a very interesting phrase. It says, when you are eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land. What does that mean? Well, it's very interesting. In many Jewish households, and you may know this, when do they say what we call grace or say a blessing? They say it after. They wait till the food is done. When they are full. Who needs the reminder? God? No, they say the prayer afterwards. We've done that a few times in our house. It's an interesting psychological effect. You're a lot more grateful after you've eaten, I think, sometimes than before, except on the Day of Atonement, right? Then the prayers are very intense and very short before you eat. When you are full, then you shall bless God. Then you shall thank God after. And that's significant. When you are full. When you are full, in this case, for Israel in Deuteronomy, something very tragic happens. A disease occurs. It sets in and engulfs Israel when they're full. This is what the expectation is. What's this disease? It's not obesity, but it is unstoppable. It's not diabetes. It's not some disease that we're familiar with. But this one overcomes us, and it's inherent in our nature. Whenever you have a full stomach here, it doesn't have to do with your stomach. It doesn't matter whether you have a large stomach or a small stomach. because it's your mind and your heart he's talking about. When your stomach is full, something happens, and if not checked, it leads to a type of death spoken of in verse 11. Remember, when you are full, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold are multiplied, that all that you have is multiplied. Verse 14, and when your stomach is when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you, that he might test you to do you good in the end. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. That happens when your stomach is full. When you are full. This disease of when you are full is known, I just coined this, I call it the doctrine of the who's. Sounds like a Seuss book, doesn't it? The doctrine of the who's. What's the name of that book? See, a lot of you know it. Dr. Seuss was a very formative factor in many of our lives. What is the doctrine of the who's? Let's read verse 14 again. Verse 14, and when your heart is lifted up and forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, skipping ahead, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness. Those are the who's. The doctrine of the who's is we forget who the who is because we replace the who with a me. The doctrine says it's replaced by me and my and mine. It is my power, my ingenuity, my strength, my wisdom, my own initiative. That's how I got here. Let me tell you, that's how I got here. It was me. Not who, me. And all of these are fine attributes. We should have ingenuity. We should have wisdom. We should always show initiative. But it's God who gives us that. Because if we don't acknowledge it to God, that we are to be ingenious and strong and wise and have initiative, when it replaces God and Jesus Christ, it becomes you. And that only happens when your stomach is full, when you're satisfied. The phrase used to be fat, dumb, and happy. You don't care because you got everything you need. You don't need him anymore. He may have gotten you there, but I'm on my own now. I can handle it. It's okay. Don't need any help now. It's all me. I got it. Not so. He says in verse 18, he says, and you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I will testify you against this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so you shall perish, because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God, because you'll forget. After you're given all these things, you'll forget. Now, what does this have to do with what we're talking about, going after other gods? It talks about forgetting. The whole point is you've forgotten who it was, who did for you. And that's bad. And that's the disease that affects us so often in this carnal life. What's also important in preparing this message, it's been in my head for a few weeks, this is a very special month. And indeed, it's a special month because there's 2 days in this month that require reflection, technically three. Today and yesterday, officially yesterday, today observed, I guess, or the other way around, is Veterans Day. And later this month is Thanksgiving. Two very interesting days, but I think 2 days that are aligned with this topic and aligned with each other. Both days require reflection. To the veterans that we have in this room and those who serve now, they're to be thanked. They're to be appreciated. They help keep us safe in wars we did not choose, but many we chose to fight in. I do believe that God has blessed us, and I do believe in the foundational aspects of what we call the United States and British Commonwealth and prophecy. I believe that Israel, the Commonwealth, and the United States have been blessed among all other countries. It is inescapable. The facts are very, very sure. We're unique. God has blessed us uniquely. In fact, to the extent we help the world. In fact, we've helped our two other brothers, Israel and UK. But God has done this. God has done it for a reason. And Veterans Day is a part of that. The country is no doubt flawed. We're not perfect. If anything, that underscores that we must be part of stiff-necked Israel, that we are so, so flawed, but we're still very, very special to God. And so this day pictures a very special group to which we say thank you. Thanksgiving is different. It too has great historical meaning, going back to the pilgrims, but it's more general in scope of Thanksgiving, and the people involved, I think it's more personal. We are thankful on Thanksgiving, but I think it's more personal. We're personally thankful for what God has done for us. And that's what I'm trying to get across today, is to be grateful. I reflected not so much on how miracles have affected my life, but how miracles are often blessings in disguise. They're blessings in disguise. In many ways, they're miracles. They're miracles in the sense because we have so much. Now, this message may not be as credible overseas in a third world country, but I'm talking to you and those that may listen to this later. We have so much. How do we know? It's by what rocks our world. Our lives are in tumult when Starbucks raises the price of a latte. I've seen people lose it for 50, 75 cents. This is nuts. Go to McDonald's. Go to 16 other places that sell coffee. The cut of meat. We're perplexed when, why has this cut of meat gone up in price? It's not available. How could you run out? I know you've never seen people in line like I have. I know I'm the only one that sees in stores these people go absolutely crazy because the price of grapes has gone up. This is nuts. It's obscene. We're furious when our air conditioning in our car is only single area and not triple or quadruple or personalized temperature vents at every seat in the car. We're upset by that. The 99-cent store ran out of something. We're perplexed. We're bewildered. We don't know what to do. It's hair on fire day. I know it's because whatever. It's because our stomachs are full and it isn't enough. Our hearts are empty, our stomachs are full. And now make no mistake, in Mr. Shemit's fine message, and most of the speakers, maybe all the speakers that speak before you in the Church of God, we really don't need a crowd to speak to. Because the subjects that we speak on usually emanated and began with ourselves. So you're just here to hear myself talk so I can share with it. We don't want to endure often. Most speakers don't want to endure their own personal pain alone. So we share it. But I forget. I and you, we focus on the useless, the unimportant, the meaningless. And we replace... All of us, you and I, replace the who with the me, the he with the me. So when we read Deuteronomy, I invite you to read it individually, personally. When we read of Israel and these days in Deuteronomy, the wandering in the wilderness, the freedom from Egypt and Pharaoh, they picture the holy days, the observance of. The miracles of those events, especially of during the Passover season, they are spectacular. Plagues, astronomical events, water turning into blood, those are spectacular. They're large. But God also talks about, remember, down to the shoes, your feet, the little things. There are miracles and blessings in disguise in little things that are important, vitally important. If your feet swell, if you need to stop and get new shoes every so often, it slows you down. It's very personal. What is a miracle? We read in the dictionary, it is technically the suspension of logic. This doesn't make sense. And each and every one of you in your own personal lives, possibly that no one ever else knows in the room, maybe not even your spouse, something that you know that had happened to you, that you said, this is a good thing. I don't understand it. It's a miracle. It doesn't make sense. I can't explain it. But I feel it's more than that. Blessings and miracles in general are more than that. Blessings in disguise, we call them personal miracles, are often where God doesn't need to suspend the laws of physics or bend them even, or put a crack in a law of biology. He doesn't need to do that. He allows things to happen naturally. In fact, I think most of the time that's what he does for us. The problem is, we didn't notice. We didn't realize it. Most of the time, in the natural course of events, we see things happen, but we don't realize that God did it. God turned it. Again, no suspension of logic. No, that didn't make sense. In many cases, you'll say, that series of events did make sense, and I didn't think it was going to happen. But it may be just exactly what I prayed for. And then we need to have a certain reaction, which we'll talk about in a minute. We have miracles often, more, I think, than we realize throughout our life, whether we are young, whether we are can't talk or shouldn't talk. We have miracles occur all the time. We just need to look, to be aware, to use the spirit that God gives us to be observant. This is not seeking after a sign. A wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about observing the phenomena in each and every one of your lives. Much like expecting faithfully in prayer for something to happen. Is that seeking after a sign? I don't need a sign. Some of us just want something good, this certain thing to happen, and we ask God to help it happen. Another way to look at it, do you realize when these things occur? Do we reflect back on an event and say, how did this happen? It happened for good. And then God may reveal to us and say, here are the 3,500 steps that it took to have this thing happen. And we're bewildered none all the more because we didn't see it. All of us have had those things happen to us. It's important, if we think about it, and I haven't turned to the New Testament, I'm going to do so now. If you would turn to the book of John, in verse 7, Jesus says something very, very interesting, which we can, when our stomachs are full, misinterpret. In John chapter 10, in verse 7, then Jesus said to them, verse 7, chapter 10, page 1782, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers. Pretty bold statement that this is in red letters, so the guy speaking is the authority to say it. Everyone that came before were robbers, and the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and I will go in and out and find pasture. And he will go in and out and find pasture. The thief The thief does not come except to steal, to kill, and to destroy. I have come, says Jesus, that they may have life and that they might have it more abundantly. He says, I am the good shepherd. Jesus Christ came for us to live abundantly. Sheep need basically room and they need pasture. They need just a little bit to survive. I recently, it was a year or so ago, I spoke to someone who keeps sheep and I said, what do they need? He says, just some green grass, lots of room, and they're happy. That's all they ever need. But Jesus said abundantly. He didn't say extravagantly. He didn't say luxuriously. He didn't say any of that. He said abundantly. You will be given the things that you need, enough. But you'll also be given blessings. Blessings in disguise, which we'll call miracles. Do you realize your conversion is a miracle? It's a blessing. But no laws of mathematics were violated. Nobody bent any natural laws for you to be converted. A mind was changed. A new creation was created. And I would ask you to reflect on this abundant life that we've all been given, a very blessed life. And remember, we used to use the phrase, count your blessings. I think look for miracles, because that's what they were at the time. If we'll only remember when they happened, what we felt, and how we felt. There are quite a few young people here. You've got it easy. Not in terms of life. In fact, we don't want to talk about what's ahead of you. I want to talk to you about what's behind you. How God in yours, you don't have to go far as back as we do. Go back over your life and remember where God intervened in a very special way. And don't discount it. We minimize sometimes the things that God does, and we forget how hopeless we were about it when we asked for it. We forget so easy. I'd ask you to reflect on that. Reflect on the miracles, both small and great, maybe very private and very personal, that you and you alone know. Recall what you felt when you got the new job, when you got the new baby. Many of you are holding that baby or have that child at your feet. Many of you have had a bona fide miracle in your life somehow, some way that only you know. A healing that you may have had occur to you. Prayers for a resolution to a situation that only you knew about, that you needed help with, and it was resolved. And then we forget, then we discount because our stomachs are full. Remember these things. Remember the miracles. Remember the miracle of walking away from a car accident. Remember, recall. Look for miracles past and expect faithfully miracles in the future. Because God wants us to have good things and to live abundantly. God asked Israel to remember and to look back at what God had done for them. Look for those events where God intervened. Remember that. It was no small thing when it happened, but it may be a distant memory now. Look for those events there God intervened. Again, we thereby build faith. So that would be one thing I'd ask you to do. Number two, very important, especially in this month. This is a month of thanking. We're going to do it twice, I hope. Once today, about thank veterans, but also to thank God. When these events occur, thank God. When anyone does anything for you or you've done anything for them, what's the one thing you'd like? Thank you. A simple thank you. So, A, look for the miracles, those events. Number two, thank God for that miracle. Number three, if warranted, and only you can decide this, if warranted, tell someone that may need to know that God still intervenes. They have in your life, they may in their life. Share that if appropriate. In all these things, look for miracles. Remember the miracles that God has given each and every one of us that sit here, that hear this. Because it was God who did that. And in fact, That's all he asks us to do, to just remember.